Welcome to Come and Reason with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Tim Jennings. Together we will reason through complex issues to find evidence-based answers that harmonize scripture, science, and our life experiences. I'm your Come and Reason host, Charles Mills. This program is sponsored by Come and Reason Ministries. Hello, everyone, and welcome. Today we present part two of a talk that Dr. Jennings gave to an auditorium filled with young people at Southern Adventist University in Collegedale, Tennessee, back in 2007. His topic was as important and timely then as it is now. Sexual abuse has touched the lives of so many among us, and Dr. Jennings dove into that subject with a no-holds-barred attitude that touched lives that day, as I'm sure it will today. Being a psychiatrist, the good doctor revealed in his presentation not only what sexual abuse does to us physically, but what it does spiritually and mentally as well. But as he always does, he provided hope right along with information. I know that you'll be blessed by what he has to say here in part two. And as I mentioned last time, this presentation is intended for mature audiences only. Let's listen.
Imagine this weekend you're walking out, maybe in one of the parks here in town, and as you're stepping forward in the grass, out of the corner of your eye, you see something black and slithery down at your feet. What will you likely do? Yes, your limbic system, a little part of your limbic system called the amygdala, is your alarm center. It's going to fire, and when it fires, it releases all these stress hormones. Your adrenaline kicks up, your heart rate picks up, your blood pressure picks up, your pupils dilate, your breathing picks up, blood is shunted away from your skin and your gut into your muscles. You're ready to rock and roll out of there, and about that moment, your prefrontal cortex catches up and goes, ah, it's just a rubber hose. Haven't we all experienced something like that? Startled, scared, and then we realize our prefrontal cortex catches up a little bit later and says, it's just a rubber hose. And I tell you this because it shows as soon as you recognize it's a rubber hose, what happens? You begin calming down. Ah, just a rubber hose. The alarm gets turned off. The job of the prefrontal cortex is to process the emotions and to calm, to turn off the alarm center. What happens in children who have been abused is this circuitry doesn't work properly. They don't have the efficiency in being able to calm, to turn off the alarm center. Not only do they not have the efficiency to turn off the alarm center, there are many distorted ideas in the prefrontal cortex, in our memories, in our belief systems, and the prefrontal cortex is sending the signal down instead, danger, keep the alarm going. What do I mean? Well, people who have been abused have beliefs in their mind that they're ugly, they're worthless, they're nasty, they're dirty, that life isn't fair, that people can't be trusted. These beliefs affect them as they walk into a social situation. People won't like me. People think I'm stupid. People will laugh at me. Nobody would really want to go out with me. I'm dirty. I don't deserve to go out with anybody. And all of those types of thoughts fire the alarm system, keep the limbic system going up. So they're nervous, they're anxious, they don't sleep well. They can have all types of physical illnesses because of this. First, we must reassure people and give them hope that regardless of their experience, they can be healed. And once we bring people to hope, build a rapport, build some confidence, there's things we can do to help their life better, then we begin to bring in truth to bear on their mind. You see, the things I said are many, many distortions. Those distortions are there because of childhood. Now, one of the truths are, if you've been abused, we can't change history. We cannot go back in time and undo the historical facts that have happened in your life. We can't do that. But we can change how those facts have been filed away in your mind. What do I mean? Well, if you were abused at your sixth birthday by your dad, we can't undo the fact that you were abused at six. But as an adult, we can look back on that and ask, how did that get put away in your heart? How did that get filed away? What typically happens, and I'll give you an example. Imagine walking out in the parking lot here today, and you see a 40-year-old man cursing at a 5-year-old little girl, calling her every foul name you've ever heard, red in the face, screaming derogatorily at her. As you observe that happening, do you go, ah, what a horrible 5-year-old little girl? Do you assess it that way? Absolutely not. You assess whatever's going on, that man has got problems. But tell me this, what does the little girl walk away feeling like? She walks away feeling like she's awful. How about if that man was her daddy? that she's nasty, that she's disgusting, that she's horrible, that she's unlovable. Is she right? No, she's not right. If you've been abused, more than likely, you're that little girl or that little boy. You operate in that way. Christ said, from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. What he means is, people will show you what's in them by the way they behave. As you observe that interaction going on, you see that the man is revealing the ugliness in his character, the ugliness in his heart. He's not telling you anything about the quality or character of that little girl. Unfortunately, the little girl at age 5 isn't mature enough yet to figure that out. She just internalizes it. It accepts it. That she's the one that's got the problem. And it gets filed away in her heart as, I'm ugly, I'm nasty, I'm disgusting, I'm worthless. Rather than realizing the truth, wow, Dad's got problems. That can't be done at age 5. That can be done today. You can look back. You can open the filing cabinet of your mind and your experience. You can look at those events. We can't change the events, but we can change where those events have been filed and file them appropriately. Imagine walking in a cow pasture. Anybody ever walk in a cow pasture? Some. Those who have not, you have to watch where you walk in a cow pasture. You have to watch where you walk because there are big piles of manure called cow pies out there, and you don't want to step in one. Trust me on this. But I want you to imagine that you slip and fall into a cow pie, and it gets all over you. It gets in your face and up your nose. Would that be a gross and disgusting experience? You bet. Would that make you a gross and disgusting person? No. You see, the children who are abused had an experience where they felt gross, they felt disgusting, they felt awful, and you bet that was a gross, disgusting, and awful experience. But as a child, instead of realizing, yes, this is gross, this is awful, this is disgusting, but I'm not, they instead personalize it, therefore I'm gross. I'm nasty. I'm disgusting. We must help them realize that, yes, those feelings were appropriate to the situation because the situation was gross. It was nasty. It was disgusting. But you never were. We need to refile. We need to reexamine the experiences and how they've been put away in our mind and heart. Children who've been abused have bad beliefs about how relationships work. I had a patient come see me. She was about 30. She had struggled with all types of relationship problems, anxiety, depression. And she told me that she identified herself as bisexual. Now, she told me that when she was a child, her daddy began to molest her before the age of 5 and continued to molest her all the way through the time she left home as an adolescent and went away to boarding high school. And then she told me when she went away to boarding high school, her first roommate and she had sexual relations. She met a boy after that, and they had sexual relations. She went away to college, and her female roommate in college, they had sexual relations, and on it went. And she told me, after we'd been working together for some time, she said these words, I've never had an intimate relationship with somebody that I didn't have sex with. You see, she had learned that her daddy loved her, you see, and daddy cared for her. And when you care for somebody, well, what do you do when you care for somebody? You have sex with them. And so every person in her life that she came to care about, that she came to love, that she came to regard as a close and intimate friend, she had sexual relations with, because that's how she thought relationships worked. And in our session, probably the most redemptive thing I did for her was in our session, as she came to trust me, she came to realize that I cared for her, that I wanted her health and well-being, as she opened herself up to me in an intimate way, I said to her, what about this relationship? Every relationship you've ever had, you've had sexual relations, but what about this one? And her eyes got big. She goes, you're right. And she realized from that moment, it's possible to have intimacy without sexual relations. I never spoke about her sexual orientation with her. She came back to me some months later and she said, you know, Dr. Jennings, I'm not bisexual. I'm heterosexual. I just thought I had to have sex with everybody I loved and cared about. You see, children who grow up in homes in which they're abused have distortions in their mind about how relationships work. We need to help love people in healthy ways, help model for them, help show them healthier ways of functioning, help get the distortions out of their hearts and minds. If the abuser was a parent or a priest or a teacher, oftentimes the young people will have distortions about God in their mind, because parents and pastors and teachers often represent God in the child's mind. Well, did God not love me? Did God want me to be abused? Why didn't God stop this if he's a God of love? Does he not care about me? Questions about God often come up and must be explored and dealt with. We must be shown the truth as revealed in Christ, that God sent his son to redeem, that he didn't stop the suffering and the abuse upon his innocent son. As I've already mentioned, in the imbalance of the limbic system and prefrontal cortex, that is a functional result. They have impaired ability to reason clearly. Those impulses or feelings end up guiding or controlling their life. People who have been abused often struggle with healthy decision-making because their decision-making often gets made out of powerful feelings rather than good judgment. The feelings are so strong that we make decisions to make the powerful feelings calm in the moment rather than thinking through the various pros, cons of a situation and implementing a decision that is actually factually, reasonably healthy for us, even if it doesn't feel good. People who have been abused struggle with these things. Their minds actually work in reverse order of the way God designed them to work. I teach my patients how God designed the mind to work, the faculties of the mind, and how they can learn to put those faculties back in balance. They have bitterness and resentment. Bitterness and resentment. It is not possible for us to heal our hearts and minds if we don't forgive those who have done us wrong. And what I find happens is people who have been abused, one of the number one obstacles that keep them from forgiving is this idea in their mind. Well, no one ever caught them. It was never reported. No one's ever held them accountable. They haven't been caught. They haven't been punished. If I forgive, it's like they get away with it. And I can't let them get away with it. This is a misunderstanding about the nature and character of sin itself. Do you realize that no one ever gets away with sin?
Well, with that important declaration, we have to end our broadcast for today. Our time has slipped away, but I invite you to our next broadcast and the conclusion of the three parts of the sexual abuse presentation that Dr. Jennings gave back in 2007 to a group of students at Southern Adventist University in Collegedale, Tennessee. This is important, important material to listen to. And by the way, we have a website, commonreason.com. If you'd like to hear these presentations again and share them with other people, you can go to commonreason.com and go to the podcast section and find the programs on sexual abuse, and you can download them and share them and listen to them again for your own edification and for the building up of others as well. That's commonreason.com. A lot of other resources available there too for you to enjoy as you continue your journey of understanding of the nature of God and the relationship that we can have with him, that he wants to have with us. That's all at commonreason.com. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, wishing you God's presence in your life. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for spending time with us today. To continue the journey, I urge you to visit commonreason.com. Here you'll find many excellent resources to help you gain a deeper understanding of the God we all love and serve. That's at commonreason.com. This is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Tim Jennings, inviting you to join us the next time we come and reason together.